are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Monday, everybody. The Timberwolves are currently enjoying their third consecutive off day today with one more on deck tomorrow before hitting the Target Center floor again on Wednesday night, this time against the New Orleans Pelicans. Today for our show, we're going to break down the Wolves-Clippers game from Friday night, which feels like it was an eternity ago, but it happened after our last podcast. So we're going to talk a little bit about it. We're going to talk about studs and duds, what happened in that game. And then we're also going to spend some time talking about the latest trade-related chatter, given that it's now December 16th and the vast majority of players league-wide can now be traded. We're not going to get too in the weeds on that yet. I think we'll save some of that for Tuesday's show as we kind of recap the rumors from the weekend. And we won't quite be ready to get prepared for the Pelicans game on Wednesday. So we'll kind of tease that a little bit, talk a little bit of trade today, but that'll be more of a focus for Tuesday's show. All right. First up, let's get to it with Wolves Clippers from Friday. This was the ESPN game on Friday evening. It was an 8:30 start. Target Center was embarrassingly empty for the live TV audience. Although again, understandable given the way that Wolves have performed. We talked last week about this being a catch 22. The fans really show up when you actually compete, and the Wolves have not been competed at home. I believe they've now still only won three games at home this year. A little bit understandable. I think things filled in a little bit towards the end of the game, and perhaps they allowed people from the upper deck into the lower deck, but it started to look a little bit better on TV. The Wolves, of course, were giving out free t-shirts for the City Edition rollout, and that just made it more obvious that there were less people because there were just blue t-shirts draped over all the empty seats. But jerseys looked good on the court. They were maybe a little bit more bland than I wanted them to look, but overall, the color goes well with the blue on the dark blue on the court. And I think they generally look pretty good. So it was cool to see those in action. On the court, the Wolves fell behind by double digits early in the first quarter, and it looked like it could be really ugly, but they did fight back. They got a really good first stint from their bench. No Patrick Beverley in this game, of course. We were expecting that on Friday's show. What was unexpected and surprising was Lou Williams did not play in this game for the Clippers. And that really gave the Wolves an advantage when it comes to their bench. The Clippers have a deep team, but in terms of scoring, they really only get Montrezl Harrell and typically Lou Williams going off the bench. In this game with no Lou Williams, if you take out Harrell, the rest of the Clippers bench, there are only four guys not named Montrezl Harrell that came off the bench and played. And they combined to only attempt six shots, and they made one of them. They were one of six. And actually, if you include Terrence Mann, who was in the starting lineup, he played 18 minutes and didn't even attempt a shot. So kind of crazy when you look at the lack of production from the Clippers bench. The Wolves actually got a little bit more from their bench. Although if you take out Jeff Teague, they also only had two buckets from their bench, both from Gorgie Jang. So this was and we'll get more into this, but this game was focused entirely on the stars, on each team's top two players and really, I guess, top three. And then really nobody else contributed in the scoring column in this game at all. At any rate, the Wolves fought back in the second quarter or early in the second quarter and then trailed by seven at halftime. And stop me if you've heard this before, recently especially, but the Wolves gave up a huge run at the start of the third quarter. The Clippers pulled ahead by as many as 28 midway through the quarter, and it was still 27 with about a minute and a half left in the third quarter before Jeff Teague went on a little mini run of his own. He had a couple of free throws, a jumper, and then a layup. So a quick 6-0 run got the Wolves to within 21 at the start of the fourth quarter. And it still, of course, seemed like the game was completely over at that point. And you would have, it would have been okay to assume that given the way the Wolves have played of late. There's a quick flurry from Karl-Anthony Towns early in the fourth quarter. He traded three-pointers with Derek Walton Jr. on the Clippers. And then suddenly it was Towns' shot, another jumper from Towns, a three-point play, a couple buckets from Wiggins and Teague, free throws by Teague, another three from Towns. And then suddenly Towns just went off about halfway through the quarter in what was a 12-point game. Towns hits a couple of free throws, another three. That was a four-point play that drew the Wolves to within five with just under 5 minutes to play. And that's when the Wolves were officially back into the game. They got as close as four But that was it. They got within four with just over a minute to play, but a 3-point play. I guess it wasn't a 3-point play, an offensive rebound. Kawhi missed a jumper, got an offensive rebound, and made both free throws to make it 6 points again with 40 seconds left. And that was basically it at that point. But good effort, good heart from the Timberwolves to fight back. Clearly getting down by 28 is never the best plan, but to fight back and get within 4 points in the latter stages of the game is really impressive. And Towns was the biggest part of that. He had 18 points in the fourth quarter. He finished the game with 39, and 18 of them were in the fourth quarter. So good fight from the Timberwolves late. The Clippers didn't ever really call things from their perspective. Like, nobody, they didn't start to bring in reserves. This was all done with the starters on the floor, or at least with the guys who played most of the game. The Clippers have a couple starters who don't play that much, but Kawhi Leonard played 37 minutes. Paul George played 39. Doc Rivers didn't call the dogs off at any point. He just assumed that this was, or he wanted to bury the Wolves, and the Wolves actually, they had that one last push in them and outscored the Clippers 36-22 in the fourth quarter. So overall, another disappointing night, we're now on a 7-game losing streak for the Wolves. So super frustrating, but at least they competed late. To see this team completely collapse and lose by 35 or 40 points would have been even more disappointing. I certainly didn't have the feeling they were going to win this game when they were in the midst of the comeback. But it was at least fun, and it made this score close, and it gives them some hope moving forward. It also shows that the team isn't completely packing it in. They've been mostly competing of late. They've just got a number of things to figure out. And now that we're entering trade season, they have some shooting to acquire, because that continues to be an issue. And we'll get more into that here in just a second. First, before we get into studs and duds and the overall takeaways from the game, wanted to mention Casper. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a quality sleep surface with the right amounts of both sink and bounce. Get $100 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/lockedonNBA and using LockedOnNBA at checkout. That's casper.com/lockedonNBA, promo code LockedNBA at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. If you can't visit Casper right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at lockedonpodcast.com/offers. This was a game that was entirely dominated by the stars on both sides. If you look at the Clippers, first of all, theirs was really two guys that dominated the game. Kawhi Leonard and Paul George combined for 88 of the Clippers' 124 points. That's 70.9%. So basically 71% of their points were from Leonard and George. The Timberwolves got 72 of their 117 from Towns and Andrew Wiggins. That's 61.5%. If you add in Jeff Teague, who scored 22 points, that Timberwolves trio scored 84.6% of the Wolves' points. So basically 85% of their points from three guys. The Clippers had that 88 from Leonard and George. They also had 18 from Montrezl Harrell off the bench. Nobody else on the Clippers scored more than 6 points. Derek Walton Jr. played 30 minutes off the bench, had 6 points, and only attempted one shot from the field. He hit a 3-pointer and then also was 3-for-4 from the free throw line. Ivaka Zubac started, only played 16 minutes, had 5 points, 7 rebounds. Terrence Mann started, didn't attempt a shot in 18 minutes. Patrick Patterson had 2 points off the bench. And then both Rodney Magruder Jr. and Jerome Robinson were scoreless off the bench for the Clippers. So really, I mean, it's to be expected, who did the damage for the Clippers, but crazy that nobody else on their roster outside of Montrezl Harrell really did anything at all. Mo Harkless also started, only had 5 points. He attempted 3 shots in 30 minutes. Also really interesting, and I don't really know what to make of this. I think I'd have to rewatch the game and watch the Kawhi without Paul George minutes, because there couldn't have been that many. But Kawhi Leonard was a plus 16 on the night in a game that the Clippers won by 7, and Paul George was a plus 1, which was the worst mark of any starter on the Clippers. So that's super interesting. Also, Kawhi Leonard was 19 of 19 from the free throw line, 3 of 3 from beyond the arc, so ultra, ultra efficient. Although inside the arc, he shot just 7 of 21, so 33% from inside the arc, but perfect from the free throw line on 19 attempts. which I believe I saw was a career high for Kawhi Leonard. He also had 11 rebounds, did turn the ball over 8 times. Paul George turned the ball over 6 times, but had 7 assists and 5 rebounds, was 6 of 15 from beyond the arc. So really, the Wolves were genuinely killed by just 2 players. Harrell only had 4 rebounds in 32 minutes, which the Wolves did a really good job keeping him off the glass. And the Clippers, as a team, only had 8 offensive rebounds. They still out-rebounded the Wolves overall, 45 to 39. As far as the Wolves go, Karl-Anthony Towns had 39 points. He was the obvious stud of the game for the Timberwolves. He had 12 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 5 turnovers. He was plus 4. He was the only Timberwolves starter to be in the positive in the plus-minus, 12 of 22 from the floor, 5 of 10 from beyond the arc for Towns. That 18-point fourth quarter in which he made 3 three-pointers really helped that number. Andrew Wiggins was also very good. He had 34 points on 20 shots, 12 of 20, 8 of 8 from the free throw line. So Andrew's really trending in the right direction from the charity stripe. He was just 2 of 7 from beyond the arc and didn't do much else in terms of box score numbers, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and a steal. And he turned the ball over 4 times. So Towns was clearly the 1A in this game. Wiggins was a 1B. Jeff Teague was very good once again off the bench. He didn't have to contend with Lou Williams or Patrick Beverley, so he was the big winner when it came to the Clippers' injuries heading into the game. Teague shot 6 of 9 from the field, 10 of 11 from the free throw line, had 22 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, only 1 turnover, and was a team best plus 13 on the night. And so he would also fall into the stud category. Nobody else makes it into that category for the Wolves. Robert Covington had 10 points, but he scored all of them in the second quarter. He was just 2 of 8 on 3-pointers, 5 rebounds, 3 steals. I wouldn't put him in either stud or dud category. As far as duds, I'm really only going to call out Jarrett Culver for this one. Culver, of course, started. He only played 18 minutes, was 0 of 5 from the field, 0 of 3 from beyond the arc, was a negative 18, by far the worst mark on the team, 2 rebounds, 0 assists, and of course, 0 points. So really a rough game from Culver. He's had a rough stretch of late, and who knows, it's the rotation's been shuffling quite a bit. He hasn't been playing minutes alongside Jeff Teague, which he had been early in the season. But it's too early to really talk about the quote-unquote rookie wall. So hoping that Culver's confidence doesn't go anywhere. And to this point, he's appeared to be a really confident player. So I don't know that we have to worry about that. But he's really been struggling of late, and his minutes have hurt the Timberwolves, certainly. Shabazz Napier also 14 minutes, 0 of 3 from the field. 3 assists, but he did turn the ball over twice. I guess he could also fit in that category. But nobody else scored for the Wolves in this one. Gorgui Dieng had 5 points off the bench. Jordan Bell had 1 point. Josh Okogie had 6 points. That was it. Jarrett Culver, Kata Bates-Diop in 11 minutes, Napier in 14, Trevion Graham in 3. Everybody else was scoreless. So the Wolves really didn't get anything from anyone else. And because the Clippers superstars each outscored the Wolves stars, that meant that the Clippers ended up with the victory. It put as simple as that. My key takeaways overall were it's more of the same in terms of poor defense and poor perimeter shooting. It's hard to get too upset about not being able to contain Kawhi and Paul George. It's just when they both score over 40 points that, you know, that's clearly the issue. As a team, the Wolves were 10 of 41 from beyond the arc, which is 24.4%. If you take out Towns 5 of 10, however, the Wolves shot under 14% from beyond the arc. They shot 5 of 36 without Towns. 13.8%. Covington and Wiggins each had 2 three-pointers. Gorgui Dieng had 1. Nobody else hit a 3. So that continues to be the number one issue for the Wolves. They're still a team that's attempting something like the 5th most threes in the league per game, but they're hitting them at a bottom 5 clip. And if that's the way the Wolves are going to continue to play, on the one hand, it's encouraging because they're playing the right way and they're in most of these games anyways. They were, of course, above 500 for the first, you know, 5-6 weeks of the season. But it's discouraging in that they're never going to win if they shoot, you know, 25% from beyond the arc for an entire game. And it also means that they're not going to be able to win games with the roster as currently constructed. I don't think that Gerson Rosas is surprised by that. I think he all along has in his plans, he knows he's got to make some changes to this roster. But he's going to have to do it sooner rather than later if this team doesn't want to continue this nosedive. They're now 10-15 after losing 7 straight games. And thankfully they have the Pelicans upcoming on Wednesday, so they'll have a chance to right the ship a little bit. All right, next up, we're going to quick spin through some of the rumors from the weekend related to the unofficial start to trade season. Okay, I wanted to close today's episode by talking a little bit about the December 15th date that we have now surpassed. And of course, that means, if you're not familiar, it means the start of the period of time in which teams can move contracts for guys that they signed over the offseason as free agents. So of course, that includes a few big names, but it also simply just helps teams package players together in larger deals. And of course, that's what the Wolves are trying to do. The Wolves are in an interesting situation in that they've got a couple of assets that people are really interested in, teams are really interested in, and Robert Covington, who's got an affordable deal for the next couple of years beyond this one. He's one of the league's best 3-and-D players. He clearly is the Wolves' best tradable asset in terms of, you know, this side of certainly not Karl Anthony Towns. Beyond him, Covington's the guy. Of course, the Wolves also have all their picks in upcoming seasons, and they also have a couple, I guess Jeff Teague would be the big expiring contract at $19 million. So his name will definitely be coming up a lot, especially with the way he's playing here recently. The Wolves also have some other attractive players that are on low salaries. So the Wolves aren't going to be motivated to move, say, Josh Okogie, who obviously has played quite well over the first year plus of his NBA career. They aren't going to be motivated to move him. Kade Bates-Diop, I mean, theoretically could be attracted to a team. He's playing well lately, and he's very affordable. Jarrett Culver is a rookie. He's now eligible to be traded as well, but it's unlikely that the Wolves would trade him. But all of those guys, also the thing that they have in common is that their salaries are very low, and in order to get an impact player in return, the Wolves aren't going to be motivated to trade any of those guys for a non-impact player. And unless they're combined with a salary like Jeff Teague or potentially Robert Covington, the Wolves aren't going to get much value in return just from the sheer fact that the numbers won't match up. And by definition, anything the Wolves want to get back, that's a player, is going to have a higher salary. That means that all trade-related talks related to the Wolves are going to center on Covington and Teague almost exclusively, because again, the Wolves just simply, it's not worth it to move any of the other guys with some upside on relatively low contracts, because they're not going to get enough in return to make it worth their while. In terms of names on the outside that are going to be in the news, we've talked at length about D'Angelo Russell. That remains the one big name that is consistently linked to the Wolves. Kyle Lowry is another one we heard a bit in the offseason and was mentioned again recently. I think it was by John Hollinger and Zach Lowe on Zach Lowe's Low Post podcast at ESPN, mentioned the Wolves as potential suitors for Lowry, although the Raptors have been better than I think even they expected this year. Lowry signed a team-friendly deal in the offseason. He's still got one more year on it, and would be an awesome addition if the Wolves were still above 500. If, you know, say that the record was flipped and they were 15-10 or 14-11 or something, finding a way to move Teague and get Lowry would be an awesome trade. It would add a dynamic element of shooting and veteran leadership to this team that they don't necessarily have right now. But I just don't see that as a realistic possibility as things stand. Back to the players that the Wolves could consider moving. The John Krasinski of The Athletic had a piece, I guess it was on Friday, where he mentioned that Andrew Wiggins is not necessarily on the block by the Wolves. They aren't really shopping him, but he's certainly not untouchable. If there was a team that really bought into what he's been doing so far this year and blew the Wolves away with an offer, they could make a move. But given, if Wiggins is what he, especially during the first 6 weeks of the season, but if he is what he has been so far this season, it's going to be hard to get to trade him for more than pennies on the dollar, which I think 9 months ago, it would have made a lot of sense to a lot of people to just go ahead and, including myself, to go ahead and move Wiggins to get off of the money. But if Wiggins is truly the second star, the Wolves simply just have a dearth in their third and fourth options. They don't really have one. Covington hasn't been consistent enough as a scorer, and they just don't have anyone else that can score outside of Jeff Teague. Another thing that Krasinski points out in his article that's really important to try and understand why the Wolves would consider moving Teague, who's been clearly their third best player this year, is that Teague thrives best in a pick and roll heavy system and a system that allows the point guard to just go and score. Tom Thibodeau likes scoring point guards, so Teague made sense for Tom Thibodeau. The Wolves' offense is currently constructed is predicated on movement, cutting, spacing, shooting. Teague's a good three-point shooter, but he's not a willing enough shooter to really fit this offense. And Teague's improvement since he went to the bench, the Wolves are 2-7 since that time. And the Wolves offense has been, if you just go back and watch the games, is a lot more stagnant than it was before Teague, or when Teague was out, and then also when Teague was part of the starting lineup. Also, Jake Lehman's been out. Kata Bates-Diop missed a game the other day. Those are two, as Krasinski points out, two of the team's best cutters, and the offense has been more stagnant with them sidelined. Of course, it can't all be blamed on Teague, and part of the reason he's been on the court so much is because he is playing well and he's keeping the Wolves in games. But for the long term, Teague doesn't make a lot of sense with the offense that Saunders and that Gerson Rosas want to be running for the Wolves. And with Teague's $19 million expiring, it's very likely he gets moved. I don't think it's super, super soon to this December 15th date. I think it's closer to February as teams kind of still figure out what it is that they need and don't need. It's a little unfortunate for the Wolves because Teague is playing so well right now. And unless somebody really wants to, unless the Wolves are really able to sell high on Teague right now, and somebody is seduced by the way that Teague's been playing in the month of December, I think he gets moved closer to February. And at some point, you know, he's going to come back to earth a little bit in terms of his numbers, as opportunity potentially shrinks as well. As the team gets healthier and Jake Lehman comes back and there's less minutes to go around in general. Although one thing for, that's a benefit for Jeff Teague is that Jarrett Culver hasn't been played as well of late. And so Teague may just continue to get tons of minutes, which could potentially increase his trade value even further. So I still sit here today thinking Jeff Teague will be the one to be traded and potentially another piece or two that's on a lower salary. But again, the Wolves aren't just simply going to move guys to move guys. If they're going to make a move, it's going to be a splash, or it's going to be, you know, future assets in return, whether that be draft picks or younger players. The Timberwolves aren't just going to shuffle deck chairs. That's not what Gerson Rosas wants to be doing. So all that to say, no concrete rumors at this point, but if you do have an Athletic subscription, head over and check out John Krasinski's piece. It's really good. He breaks down each of those players, Wiggins, Covington, Teague, the possibility that each of them could be moved or not moved. So it's a really good primer for trade season for the Timberwolves. All right, that's all we have for you today here at Locked On Wolves. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.